Welcome to the Mock Stars Podcast, the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. I'm one of your hosts, Menace, and I'm here with Flash.
I kind of heard the sound effect.
Well, that's because I sang it that time. Or wait.
You didn't press the button. You didn't use the soundboard.
That was my voice.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, here we go. I'm back.
What's up, dude?
G-T-O-G-O.
Let's go. Yeah, dude. I'm so happy to have you back. Oh, my God. There was reports of widespread cringe when I was here alone.
Widespread cringe.
Yeah. Yeah, I did a impromptu sample of what it would be like if we received sponsorship. And apparently I laughed so hard to myself when I re-listened to it that I thought it was cool to include in the show. Everybody else was like, oh, man.
Commercial material.
Yeah, yeah. So you can't leave me alone ever again. Apparently, I make the show. You balance me out on the show. So, hey, welcome back. Good to have you.
I'm back.
Woo! If you didn't know where you're at, this is Mock Stars Podcast, the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. I know it's only been about 35 seconds since I said that the first time, but I never really know how long people's short-term memories are. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by finding us on YouTube, where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. We're at 408 subscribers. We're so close to 500. We're almost there. That's our next goal, one step at a time. Thank you, everybody, for supporting, subscribing, and staying tuned for more. Yeah, super-duper appreciate it. As the show grows, I mean, we're only at 10% of what we're going to be at the end of the year. You know, we're going to be at 4,000 by the end of 2025. You know, goals, baby. Hashtag new year, new me. You can also support the show by finding us on all major podcasting platforms, where you can leave us a 5-star review, make us look super duper cool, leave a comment on whatever podcasting platform will allow you to do so, and we'll see it and we'll get back to you. You can also support us on Patreon, where you can become an official Pepperhead for $3 a month. We have a new Patreon structure. This is the announcement that we have been sort of teasing over the last few weeks, but our structure is changing just a little bit. The Pepperhead tier is now a full supporter tier for $3 a month. You can just support the show, and we appreciate that super duper. We love you guys. Thank you so much for your support. We also have the Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead tier for $5 a month. You can be a Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead, just like Will Rule, K-Mr. K, UWP Quirt, D-Mun 82, Tommy Cipher, Jacob Hibbard, The Boogie Ghost, Pool Boy Barry, Draw for Turn, KB, Maybe Jeremy, Maybe Anthony. Thank you all for your support. The changes that are coming to the Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead tier are that now that the Pepperhead tier, the supporter role, is no longer going to gain you access to the biweekly giveaways, the Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead tier gains you an entry. So this is the bar for entry now for these biweekly giveaways, and you get a shout out at the end of every episode, because there are no longer Pepperhead tier entries, your chances to win actually increase. So we hope this is a positive change for this tier. We also have a new tier. It is called the 2-liter tier, where because 20 ounces isn't enough, you need a 2-liter to satisfy those cravings of Dr. P. This is a tier that gets you the 2 entries. You get a shout out at the front of the episode, and this tier gets you early access to our new line of videos, where we have, you'll see this week, we're going to be talking about our card of the week, And then the new line of videos will expand on those, the card that we've chosen that, and talk about, those things. Anyway, you'll get early access about to that video on Patreon 1 week before it goes live publicly. And then we have an additional expansion to the what was the Cherry Pepper Vanilla Head tier that Ravenlift had owned solo for, had worn the crown for so long and earned, has earned five hats so far. Almost there, buddy. Almost the full
five
year.
Hats, zero crowns.
Hey, if you imagine it, a hat is a crown, right?
You know, according to local lore, a hat is a crown.
Mm. Let me ask Don Cheadle quick. Hey, Don! He's in the bathroom. He'll let me know when he gets out. Okay. But it is now called the Mock Stars Lounge Access with Don Cheadle. And by joining this tier, you gain the exclusive opportunity to pretend like you're hanging out with LeBron's fake family from Space Jam 2. And alongside Don Cheadle, you'll feel like you're chugging Dr. Pepper on the moon. I wrote that. Just pure poetry. And
in the moment? Or are you reading from the Patreon description?
I'm reading from the Patreon.
Okay.
This is expanding to three members that will gain access to the Mock Stars Lounge. And this is also gains early access and all benefits of tiers prior. For anybody who is interested, the Surgeon Master General tier is still available. It is still there.
It's a mere $2,300 a month.
Yep. $1,000 or no, $100 for each flavor of support. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so check out the Patreon. Let us know in the comments or reach out to us. We love feedback. We want to know if these changes are for the better. Change is always weird, so we don't really know what the results are. We'll sort of like feel it out over the next couple of weeks. But this will be the last week of the previous Patreon tier. And so next week, all of these changes will go live. When this episode comes out, these tiers will be live. So you can sign up for those tiers, change your membership or whatever. And next week's episode will reflect those changes. All right. On this week's episode, we are talking about the top three decks, not competitively, like in, you know, I would say that in results. Right. But
we do talk about deck rankings sometimes.
This
is not one of those episodes.
Correct. We are talking about our three favorite decks from 2024. These are decks that performed incredibly well. Two of these decks are just completely new to CDH, so they're really exciting right now. They're a ton of fun. I will be going to a CDH tournament on the 12th, I believe. Yes, January 12th down in Tacoma to play, and I will be playing one of these decks. I'm super stoked. I'm super stoked. It's the first time that of the year. It's the first tournament of the year for me, and it's been a while. So I'm ready to get some reps in and get back out there, compete and win this freaking thing. But it'll be Tordeth's last tournament in the Pacific Northwest for quite some time. Is relocating to Ohio.
Ohio.
Yeah. So it'll be a good time to it'll be the last time we'll see this famous Rocco build for quite some time. So before we get into our top three decks of 2024, we have our card of the week. And this card has been making waves in multiple formats, but as it pertains to CDH, it also has been having quite the effect on, well, one deck in particular. This week's card of the week is Kaido, Bane of Nightmares from Duskmourn. This is 2, a blue, and a black for a legendary planeswalker Kaido with ninjutsu, one a blue and a black. If you're unfamiliar with ninjutsu, it is whenever you have an unblocked attacking creature, you can pay the ninjutsu cost of the card in your hand, return that unblocked attacking creature to your hand, and replace it with this tapped and attacking creature. During your turn, as long as Kaido has one or more loyalty counters on him, he's a 3/4 ninja creature and has hexproof. And then you can, which is a whole line of text. Jesus. You can also plus one. You get an emblem with ninjas you control get +1/+1. You can zero, surveil two, then draw a card for each opponent who lost life this turn, or you can -2, tap target creature, put 2 stun counters on it. Starts with 4 loyalty. This card, and this is a new design space, and just like we're going to see with Aether Drift, we're getting new design space with Planeswalkers in general. Like, we started seeing, you know, like, static effects pop up on Planeswalkers. I can't remember. That was War of the Spark, I think, right?
As War of the Spark is correct.
Yeah, it's when static effects started showing up. And now they're playing with new design space with ninjutsu here. And so this card has been, one, an unstoppable force in Standard. The arena, like little Standard tournaments that have been popping up, Kaido Demir midrange is like almost 60% of the field. And it is just taking over. It is so consistent. There's so many one drops of flying that do additional things. And this just comes down and it is crazy. And now, design space wise, why'd they give it a hexproof? You know, like, it doesn't die to a cut down. It dies to a go for the throat, yes. But, you know, you have to, you know, I just feel like there's, the hexproof was given because they wanted to also ensure that in main phase 2, after this comes down, you get to activate. So it is an incredibly powerful card. In the way that it makes waves in CDH is that in Yuriko, it has proven to become quite the card advantage engine in decks because of that zero ability. That after you ninjutsu this in and you deal damage, Yuriko reveals a card, and then each opponent, loses life equal to the mana value of the revealed card. And so Kaido comes down, you knock him, and then reveal with Yuriko, and then they all lose life, and then you zero out, surveil two, and draw 3 cards. It's the best ancestral recall I can think of with upside. So it's a really cool card. That's why it's this week's card of the week. If you want to hear our expanded thoughts on this, you can check out that video launching exclusively for early access on our Patreon platform for our 2-liter tier and above. And then the video will go live the following week, where it might not even be relevant anymore because Kaido is probably going to get banned in Standard. I don't know. We'll see. They'll find a way to balance it all out. They don't want to ban cards they just introduced, as you know, or after all. All right, Flash, you ready to talk about the top 3 decks, our top 3 decks from 2024?
Ready.
All right, here we go. Our first deck of 2024. This is a commander that wasn't made in 2024. It was actually made in 2020 and has just started seeing more and more play. And on top of that, this commander was also our most viewed video. Like, when we did the CDH breakdown for this card, it was our most viewed video of all time. So we're almost at 2,200 views for it. So our first deck is Taeyom. And in 2024, Taeyom has seen more action than it has ever seen. And only in the last 3 or 4 months has it truly come into its own. And that has sort of coincided with the banning of Dockside and Mana Crypt and a few other things. And this deck has just thrived in a dockside-less meta. Turns out it's a pretty good card that pinned. The thing was, the dockside was so good, it pinned other decks beneath it. And it just was like, you can't build a board state via artifacts, enchantments, or anything like that, because you will just lose the game on the spot when someone drops a dockside. And I think while dockside was really good and it was absolutely necessary in whatever deck you're playing, if you include red, it was ultimately a toxin. It's like to the format and everything else. All these other decks are thriving because of its absence. So even the decks that existed beforehand that took advantage of dockside are still thriving. So, yeah. Why didn't we do this sooner? You know, like, it turns out dockside, it could have been gone a long time ago, and I don't think we'd be better off for it. I wouldn't have had to experience it's, you know, I have a little bit of trauma still with it. When I'm building decks, I'm like, man, dockside can't hurt me no more. Why am I even second guessing, you know, Sanctum Weaver? I shouldn't. But Teom has been thriving, not only due to, you know, the absence of dockside, but it has gotten a lot of new cards lately, you know, including one of my top 10 cards of 2024, Six. Six has just been amazing. Like, I think most of the cards that were in my top 10 last week were cards that I was wrong about. Like, that I was like, I don't see it. And then I saw it and I went, whoa, that's really good. So six is in green decks, if, you know, with the addition in three color builds, I would say probably stronger than Underworld Breach in most cases. Like, it just has that repeatable effect that can, it doesn't sacrifice itself at the end step and ignores, doesn't necessarily ignore timing conditions or anything like that. But yeah, as long as it's your turn, non-land permanent cards in your graveyard have retrace. So it's in Teom is basically a secondary commander as long as you have, you know, have a land in hand. So this is, yeah, it's sort of disgusting here. Not only that, but when it attacks, you mill three cards, which gives you more fodder for Teom. So a really great card here. Enduring Vitality makes an appearance as well. Turns out turning your creatures into dorks, including, you know, and also giving them a vigilance counter is really good. But yeah, this, the Teom over the course of 2024 has only grown and in popularity, in consistency, I would say, and has definitely been one of those decks that is also putting up plenty of results as well. So and the results actually have been been consistently higher. The conversion rate for the deck has gone from the low 20s to the high or to like mid 30s. I think it's something like 33% convert if there are 60 or more entrants. So that's via EDH top 16. So it's it's a really great deck. And in 2024, it just saw a lot of support with Modern Horizons 3. Even like Duskmourne has brought a few new cards to the fray for it. And there's Jumpstart, this crazy card. Flash, have you heard or, even read Scythecat Cub?
Not familiar with this card.
No, I don't blame you for it. It is ridiculous. It is hard to find because it only comes in Jumpstart, but it is standard, or it's like, it's legal in pretty much all formats right now. It is one in a green for a 2/2 trample that says it has landfall, so you know it's busted. It says whenever a land you control enters, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. If this is the second time this ability has revealed this or has resolved this turn, double the number of +1/+1 counters on that creature instead. Yeah. So with Teom's ability to recycle lands, like you can pay three because the ability doesn't like say you, it just says return a permanent with mana value three or less. So mana cost three or less. So you can pick a land, grab a fetch land, Scythecat Cub's out there. Boom, there's a counter. Fetch doubles that counter. Now you have three counters, you know? Or because you have a vigilance counter on the Scythecat Cub. So it's a pretty great card here, especially when you build around with plus one counters, blah, 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 blah. Tons of that stuff, especially with Young Wolf has Undying here. It's they're even playing this new deck list, which I'm looking at, which is by user I Am Idiot. Is playing Bristly Bill as well. So more landfall triggers for more plus one counters. You love to see it. I Am Idiot. Thank you so much for this build. Overall, really like what Tayom has been doing through 2024. Excited to see what it does in 2025. This is a deck that I have personally always loved. I really like the -1/-1 counter variant that probably is less consistent and less powerful, but a little bit more fun to play because there's some more hoops to jump through. As you know, I like building Rube Goldberg machines, Flash. So making,
you're famous for it.
Yeah, making a Hapatra Yawgmoth package in a Tayom build that revolves completely around -1/-1 counters would be exactly the type of deck I build with things like Amity Eternal and I can't think of the thing. Oh, that's what it's when it enters, you put two -1/-1 counters on something, on a creature you control, and then whenever a zombie you control dies, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life. And so there's combo lines. Boom. You guys can see it. You're seeing it in your mind's eye right now, in your memory palace. You thought I'd forget. I didn't.
You didn't. Kept it in your memory palace.
Yes, sir. The memory palace. You're seeing it. The -1/-1 counter synergy. It's alive. It's well. It's good. But not really. Because you lose out on things like Bartholomew. Bartolome del Presidio. You lose out on things like that. I'm calling it Bartholomew from now on. All right. Tayom, we wish you luck in 2025. I know that we're just going to get some crazy stuff that makes this deck just better and better. It always happens. It has a very wide net of things that, you know, mana value three or less. Boom. Put it in the deck. The next deck we're talking about, Flash, this one speaks to you. It's I don't know what else to say about it other than it is the Frog of Doom. It is Glarb.
Yeah, Glarb rules, right? Like, I feel like it's just a very solid, like, card advantage in the command zone. Flash, like, extends your win con type commander. Like, it's not obviously OP. Requires a little bit of build around, but, like, it gets the job done.
Yeah, absolutely. This is proven to even be other content creators' favorite deck. Like, of the year, like something new. I think that was what we were all begging for at the top of the year, was like, you know, format seems stale. When are we going to get something new? And then we got Nadu, and then, well, everybody hated or loved it. And I don't think there was any in between.
No, I feel like Glarb is the correct power level. Whereas like Nadu was just, you know, was just busted.
Yeah. And it's good that it got hit with a hammer, because, you know, otherwise the format would be half Nadu, half Dockside, and then no one would be having fun. But
now I also feel like Glarb is like emblematic of a couple, like, you know, Wizards has figured out some of this stuff, like Master of Keys, Halen, the Baymaker, Is that record name?
Balin the Haymaker.
Balin the Haymaker. Jared Pepper Vanilla Head.
Yep.
Like, you know, that is kind of the correct power level where it's just like you can do something with this in CDH without it being busted to the extent that Nadu is busted.
Yeah. If you guys aren't familiar, this is a Sultai commander. Black, green, blue, frog, wizard, noble. Has relevant types, especially the frog and wizard part. But, you know, you get a 2/4 with death touch. You may look at the top card of your library at any time. You may play lands and cast spells with mana value 4 or greater from the top of your library. And then you can tap Glarb to surveil 2. And the reason that I say, you know, the frog part is valuable is because cards like Valley Floodcaller say that whenever you cast a non-creature spell, birds, frogs, otters, and rats you control get +1/+1 until end of turn, and you untap them. So the surveil,
yeah, in the same way that Orcish Bowmasters can be a board wipe if you need it to be, in the right circumstances, like Glarb plus Valley Floodcaller can be a board wipe if you need it to be.
Yeah, there was a line that I saw after we did our initial episode where. Mm-hmm.
With Knack and stuff like that.
Yeah, and Legolas's quick reflexes.
Yep.
I was like, what? Oh, man, yeah, you can just start sniping. Because it's that old Viridian longbow line. I think, you know, it was just like, for a long time, if your commander had death touch, you put Viridian longbow in your list because it gives your ability the ability of tap, dealing damage to any target. And so your death touch commander would snipe things. This just, you know, Legolas's quick reflexes next to Glarb just makes so much sense where it's like, oh, yeah. And if Valley Floodcaller is out, you know, you get 2 untap triggers off of that. You get the cast, you tap it, you surveil 2. The resolution of Legolas's quick reflexes will untap it. And then you get to tap and then snipe something for 2 damage, effectively killing every, you know, all creatures out there. So as long as you can string some non-creature spells together, Glarb can, like with the, you know, quick reflexes, can definitely be a piece of removal as well. So
yeah, no, I mean, Glarb has that versatility where, like you're saying, there's some combo lines in the deck, you know, where it can do that. There's, you know, obviously the Doomsday lines that we went into extensively.
Yep.
There is, like, you know, the semi-related to the Doomsday stuff, like the Elsha of the Infinite type ability, which was already a CDH fringe commander.
Yep.
You know, and then I think you're also in great colors for playing off the top of your deck. And the restriction of 4 CMC or higher, like, doesn't come into play a lot because, like, there's a lot of stuff that you can play for free that is 4 or 5 CMC.
Right. Yeah. Because we talked about the Doomsday lines. If you want to.
Essentially, if a card can be played for free, it's going to be at least 4 CMC because they add mana to it for the alternate cost.
Right.
That is the balance on the card. So.
Yeah. Like, if you guys missed our Glarb video, make sure you go back and you check it out. We go into those Doomsday lines a little bit more in depth. But basically, when you build your pile, right, you have your few cards that you're going to roll through right away with the surveil ability or be able to cast off the top. But the cards you leave at the, like, on top of the library when you want to resolve your win condition is something like Force of Will or Commandeer or, you know, Misdirection, you know, one of those types of effects where you can, you know, cast it for free by paying some other thing, or like you can't Fierce Guardianship with this, but you can definitely Force of Will, you can Gush, you can Misdirect, you can Mind Break Trap. You know, it's like there are definitely options for you when you're creating a Doomsday pile to protect your win condition. So that is also the power of Glarb, is, you know, it brings a strategy that we thought, I think for a long time, I hadn't seen it. Like, it was lost to the archives, mm-hmm. but it's back. Like, Doomsday.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting that it has this, an interesting angle to it, is that it treats your library and your graveyard co-equally. Like, maybe with Gitrog Monster, you are more concerned with what's in your graveyard. And, like, you know, where anytime you're doing one of those things, focusing on one or the other, Glarb does both.
Yeah.
It interacts with cards in both piles. Or, you know, the deck is built to interact with cards in both piles.
Yeah, there's...
It's a really good card advantage, you know?
Yeah, it's, like, on top of... Yeah, card advantage engine, huge, you know? And then... It's just like the information that you get. It's an information engine as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, uses both zones equally. And so like
I think this is a deck that with, you know, as we get pilots that are devoted to it, the deck's going to get figured out. And I think it's going to be a contender in 2025. Like, we're still going to be talking about Glarb in 2025.
Yeah. So many people who, have ADHD, myself maybe included. I don't know. I never got the diagnosis, but you know, it's one of those things where it's like you pick the deck up, you give it a shot, and you play it for like a month, and you aren't getting the results you want, and so you put it down, and you walk away from it. You take it apart. This is one where you got it. Like, I was rewarded when I put in the work with Shalai and Nalar, and I still see the reward a year, you know, 18 months down the line, because I stuck with it. You're absolutely right, is that the more you play with it, the more scenarios you're going to see, the more scenarios you're going to know how to handle and approach and, you know, navigate through. So
I mean, because right now the entire community is like, this is a doomsday deck,
right?
Maybe it's not even a doomsday deck. Like, maybe there are some interactions here where it's even more powerful different pieces, and you abandon the doomsday line, you know, at some point in the future.
Absolutely.
Like, Glarb has that kind of potential.
Yeah, we just don't, like, we don't know what's on the horizon, what will make the deck, like, stronger, what will give it new lines. But all we know right off the bat, just by looking at the commander, is that, yes, it's by itself on the battlefield will allow you to see more cards than other commanders that are in the meta. So I just think that is valuable alone. Like, not only that, but I think in your build, which is what we're looking at on screen on YouTube right now, is, you know, you've included like Ashiok Dream Render. This deck has access to like stacks pieces that are, you know, one-sided, that make your opponent's lives harder, you know. And then Jace Wielder of Mysteries, which will, you know, win you the game. So, like, not only that, you're playing six now, one of my favorite cards of all time.
Great card.
Yeah. Poliwag Prodigy. I was thinking,
No, I think there's versions of the deck that play Tyvar, Jubilant Brawler. Like, you know, there's opportunities for Devoted Druid, Hazel the Brewmaster, you know,
yeah,
green mana lines. Like, I think that Doomsday, you know, it's going to, it's an obvious strategy that slots in with Glarb. I'm just saying, like, this deck has so much upside, so much potential that, like, there's other builds that we haven't even looked at yet.
Yeah, there's one spell that you could put in here because you're playing Valley Floodcaller. This was I tried explaining the combo last week, and honestly, I still can't remember it. Valley Floodcaller combo. It's on my recent searches. I can't remember it for the life of me, but Retraction Helix or Banishing Knack are two cards that say until end of turn, target creature gains, tap, return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. So you have an outlet here with Glarb that if you play Valley Floodcaller and give Valley Floodcaller the ability to tap and return a target non-land permanent, and you return, like, let's say Lotus Petal, or, you know, something of the like, or a mana positive rock like Soul Ring, and then, or Chrome Mox even, and then you just choose not to exile something, you get to surveil your entire library. So, like, Valley Floodcaller can also be a central point to maybe even, you know, if you don't want to run the Doomsday line, you want to focus that combo line. It's one more piece, and I'm not saying that it's better, but, you know, it is a
there
side.
There is the Otter build.
Yeah.
To this deck, possibly.
Yeah, it's a side quest that, you know, you can also do with Poliwag Prodigy. So, and Prodigy here also Frog wizards, baby. Let's go. Yeah, you just get access to so many good things here. I mean, Deathrite Shaman. Where, like, the next deck we're going to talk about, we don't have access to those nice things. It's sad. But I am seeing the similarities. I didn't realize it. But when I was reading Glarb again, I was like, huh, yeah, there are definitely some parallels here. No, Glarb, I love it. I think you're absolutely right. Miri's Guile made it into the build. I see you made the change.
Yeah, we'll see. That is a card that I think is going to perpetually be on the cutting room floor.
Right. Yeah, if something comes up that provides more instantaneous value.
Yeah, I think, don't I have burgeoning in there right now or something?
You have exploration, yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's another card that might come out for something better. Like, just got to see. Like I said, let's see how Glarb develops. Like, I truly think that this is one of the best commanders of 2024.
Yeah, me too. I feel the same way. Quick side note. We did get someone comments on our YouTube on YouTube about our Gitrog monster video in relation to Necropotence, and I feel like it's a good time to, now that I see it in your list, talk about Necropotence. Necropotence, even though you think it's funny, it's funny you think you know how a card works, right? You've seen it a million times, you've played against it. And usually you'd think when a card goes to the graveyard, you discard it. It just goes into exile because you don't care about those triggers, right? Necropotence creates triggers when those cards are sent to the graveyard because they hit the graveyard and then they get moved to exile. So if you didn't know that, that's what happens with Necropotence in relation to the Gitrog monster, because the Gitrog monster cares about things hitting the graveyard. When you discard the Dakmar Salvage to whatever, those triggers go on the stack at the same time. You choose how they resolve. You put the Dakmar back in your hand. Bada bang, bada boom, mill two cards. So you can win on the stack. That's why Necropotence is in that list. And I'm sure now that we know that, we can actually attribute that to Glarb and probably make the deck a little bit better, like in knowing how to interact with the stack in a little bit more unique way. All right. Our third and final deck of 2024 that we love. This one is very, very recent. This is while you were gone. I fell in love with this deck. This will be the deck that I play at the tournament on January 12th, and I will see how it goes. I'm abandoning my Nyagai Gondu stuffs, things that I usually would show up with Shalayan Hallar and clap cheeks, but this time around, I'm going to Bant because Helga has my heart. Helga Skittish Seer. I still have a little bit of work to do on the list, but this deck has enamored me now. Now that
What is the commander? What does the deck do?
Helga Skittish Seer is a green, white, blue legendary frog druid. Whenever you cast a creature spell with mana value 4 or greater, you draw a card, gain 1 life, and put a +1/+1 counter on Helga Skittish Seer. You can tap Helga, add X mana of any one color where X is Helga Skittish Seer's power. Spend this mana only to cast creature spells with mana value 4 or greater, or creature spells with X in their mana cost. So, a 1/3 out the gate. This is Food Chain Commander in Bant that I really, really like, because Mist Hollow Griffin is your food chain outlet in blue, right? It is 4 mana, if I can find it in my list. There it is.
Oh, what? 4 mana?
It's 4 mana. And Helga doesn't care if you use the mana that she creates. It just cares that you cast a creature spell with mana value 4 or greater. And so when you put Food Chain out and you go and you cast Mist Hollow Griffin and Helga sees that, or you just assemble Food Chain, create the infinite mana, and then cast Helga, and then you still cast Mist Hollow Griffin infinitely, you get to draw your whole library just because your commander says that whenever you cast a creature spell with mana value 4 or greater, you draw a card and then gain a life, blah, 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 counters, counters, counters. So this deck pretty much does everything that I love. It deals with plus one, plus one counters. And it is a Rube Goldberg machine. You have to...
Yep. Well, in losing red, you gain blue, and now you can actually fight on the stack.
Dude, you know how often it's been... You know how long it's been since I have been able to, in a tournament setting, be like, no, or, you know, like, stick my finger in? I've usually... every other time I've had to, like, politic my way. And now that I've built the skills to be like, hey, man, you should counter that, you know, because I've never been able to, I can use those skills politically to still manipulate while having the additional, you know, tool in my pocket to interact myself. So this deck, instead of laying stacks down, cares more about pursuing its win cons and then also having the interaction to back those things up. So I really like it in that way. I also really like the fact that I can neoform my commander into a Mist Hollow Griffin and pursue Food Chain that way. I also really like, yeah, there's a lot of different lines. Like, I like that I can neoform my commander into a Academy Rector and then go pursue my line. You know, like I just, when I made the swap, this was after I recorded the episode in the first place, but I made a couple swaps right away, and it was one to include Academy Rector in here because this is a Food Chain list. And then I also included Neoform, and because I'm going to focus on, you know, like killing the Academy Rector if I can, I'm gonna also find room for Flare of whatever in white so I can instant speed sacrifice the Academy Rector or Helga in any case to protect my win condition, protect my board state, all those things. I think that Flare of Fortitude, that's what it is. So the deck, this is where, when I was making the deck, I really like, it's 38 creatures. It is heavy. This is one of those decks that if you go on EDH Top 16, it has no results in tournaments.
Boy. Yeah. Soon to be one result.
Soon to be one result in the top 16, that's for sure. But it is no results unless you go with, you know, tournaments less than like 60 people, you know. So these are like really small tournaments, locals that are using the platform. And like, even the results there, like there was one deck that got second place in an 8-player tournament. And you're like, yeah, nice work. you did it. But, yeah. You know, it's like the deck has a huge ceiling where I'm playing Null Drifter from Modern Horizons 3, which is 7 mana, colorless, evoke for 3. But again, they're costs that you can pay, just like in Glarb, that help trigger your commander or help take advantage of your commander. So Null Drifter, I can still evoke it, but it will be seen as a 7 mana or greater creature when I, you know, when it goes onto the stack. So Helga will see it and I will draw a card, gain a life, put a plus one counter on Helga. But then I also get to play enchantment creatures, since I'm always in an enchantment type build, like Colossal Sky Turtle, which has...
Nice.
You know, so there is intention. There is intention in casting Colossal Sky Turtle for its flying Ward 2 6/5 body. And like, so if it comes to it, you know, and I don't have, you know, hey, there's no reason to hold on to this incredibly powerful channel ability. Like, I need to draw a card or whatever. Colossal Sky Turtle's there for me, man. But then, you know, things like, Hullbreaker Horror come into play. There's some lines there where I can infinitely bounce and draw my library, which is cool. Con Sphinx, card draw, Wandering Archaic, you know, things like Solitude and the lesser appreciated Elemental Incarnation, Subtlety, where...
Oh, I love Subtlety.
Yeah, but it triggers Helga, so why not include it? This is a deck...
I mean, that's card in Glarb.
Yeah, it's really great. Yeah, because you can cast it right off the top. I'm also including High Fae Trickster from Foundations, which is a great. new yep. this is a new card that I think is only going to continue going up in value the more that CDH players pick up on it and strive for the mid game. Because here at the Mock Stars podcast, we are in the mid range mindset all the time. The High Fae Trickster allows you to cast any spell as though it had flash. So it itself has flash. It has you. So it's pretty good. Also, Heliod, Radiant Dawn. It's a 4-mana god that you can transform it and gives all your stuff flash. And things cost less. It's pretty cool. The deck is really cool. I really like it. There are definitely some changes to be made. But, before I go to tournament with it. But, man, it is just... It looks... And, like, when I'm playtesting it, it's so much fun. I get to play Kozilek's Unsealing. Because most of my creatures are 4-mana, 4, 5, or 6. So it just benefits me in addition to things that I'm already doing. The land package, have yet to change all the artworks, so they're nice and pretty and shiny. But yeah, this deck, I'm really excited for it in 2025 because it doesn't have results, but it is clearly here. Like, in the cards, this deck can compete and can put up results. There are too many good cards and too many effective lines of strategy to say that it won't. Like, that's what I believe. I'm all in on Helga for the first part of 2025 until I find something that also sings to me. I'm in on Helga. I am excited for it. I think that once I report back with either my success or failure, I will then still be able to continue to grow the deck in the direction that helps me succeed in whatever meta that I'm like competing in or participating in. So, yeah. Same with Glarb. You know, like Glarb just needs reps, and it's already proven. You know, people are out there testing it right now. You know, it's like
people are glarbing every day.
Yeah. I didn't think that that's a verb.
It is.
Yeah, it's real.
Get glarbed,
baby. Not only does it sound like it's fun to say, it is fun to say.
It is. Maybe that's the next hat. Get glarbed.
Ooh. Okay. Another hat in addition to the Nye guy going do. We'll get another one that says get glarbed. And then when you sign up for the Mock Stars.
We got more people in the lounge. We need more hats.
Yep. Yep. And then you'll get a random one. You know? I like that idea. Get glarbed. Okay. Flash, any thoughts? Any final thoughts on these three decks as we move into 2025?
Nah, man. Nothing. I'm just excited to see the future of them. We got one... You know, old standard that's getting new life.
Yeah.
And we got two straight up fresh new commanders in a fresh new design space that I think are going to thrive in 2025.
Yeah, that's and the two that we really like are both from Bloomborough, which, you know, like,
yeah, I did not have high expectations for the set going in, but there is a ton of stuff from that set that gets played. Like we've mentioned Poliwog Prodigy. We mentioned Valley Floodcaller, Amphibious Downpour, staying on that frog tip. Balin the Haymaker. What else?
It's Halen the Baymaker.
That set had some... What's up?
It's Halen the Baymaker.
Halen the Baymaker. You're right. I messed up. Cherry Pepper Vanilla Head. Resetting. What else came out of Bloomborough that's actually getting play? There is a handful of stuff, surprisingly.
I think it's more shocking... That we saw, you know, well, Into the Flood Maw is also seeing a lot of play.
Yeah, Into the Flood Maw for sure.
You know, it's just it's crazy to me that more than anything that these cards are not just tech pieces. That, you know, we're not just like saying, oh, this is a new card. It has a powerful ability. Like, we're going to test it and see how it performs over the next few months. And then we'll just return to what we were using before, because that was not only like successful, but it was putting up results, and this doesn't do the same thing. So those cards that like Valley Flood Caller have become not just tech pieces, they're staples in the format now. So that's a point I'm trying to make, is like Poliwag Prodigy comes into the format. Initially, we see the value in it, and it proves that it is worth every penny. You know, it proves that it, you know, can and deserves to be where it's at in every blue list that can fit it in. So
yeah, it's not Rhystic Study, but it's pretty close. And if you can get a third copy of that effect in your deck, you should.
Yeah, and it's just most decks now that, you know, where we're at in the format right now is that most decks are turning to being creature shells. So like, not only does it like come down and potentially draw you a card early in the game, if you drop this on turn one or whatever, it's probably drawing you a card if your opponents kept hands that were advantageous to generating mana, you know, with mm-hmm. Mox Diamond or Chrome Mox Opal, whatever. Right. Like, but then on top of that, you are probably going to play a creature the following turn that puts a counter on it, and then you encapsulate so much more. And then, you know, it's just like in this Helga list, I have Heliod Suncrowned in here because whenever Helga triggers, I also gain a life. And if I have the Poliwag Prodigy out, you know where that counter's going. It's going right there because it then encapsulates so much more and helps me draw that many more cards. So, yeah, it's just, the more creatures you play alongside Poliwag Prodigy, the more likely it is that it gets larger and larger. And guess what? You always have a creature to put into play from the command zone. And most of the time, it's stronger than a 1/3. So you're going to get a counter anyways. So I really like Valley Flood Caller becoming a staple is just a no-brainer. Valley Flood Caller becoming a staple, and it also has combo lines, a no-brainer. I think that Into the Flawed Maw has proven to be more of a staple lately because we are no longer concerned with bouncing things that we own to our hands. Like mm-hmm. If we want to do that, we'll play Hullbreaker Horror and we'll find ways to pursue that line more aggressively. It is all about returning something else, and you don't have to give the fish to the person you bounce the thing to. You can give the fish to anybody. So it's, you know, it has upside in bouncing things for the lowest possible amount of mana, you know, to get that type of effect. So I'll hold my breath on the absolute zero mana return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand, you know, effect. But yeah, it's pretty much the lowest cost you're ever going to see on an effect like that. 2025 is bright. A lot of new sets coming. Aether Drift first. If you didn't know it, I will be in Chicago for Magic Con in February alongside some people who are probably listening right now. My original pod from Wisconsin, a few of those guys are also going to be out there. So I'm excited to, you know, jam some games with them. And if you're listening to this, you're going to be out there in Chicago. I'm excited to jam games with you. So I'll be out there for the whole weekend. And definitely bringing Helga, definitely bringing Shalayan Halar. And there's a couple other decks I'm really excited about. But I was thinking about participating in a Pioneer thing while I'm there, okay. Too. I got high hopes for this Gruul Otterball list that I've built. So,
okay.
Yeah. Every format benefits from having, you know, bodies.
It's a different experience, you know?
Yeah, and I'll
Why
just
not do it.
Yeah, the experienced players will just throw me in the mud and step on my head as they move forward in the queue. But yeah. And you gotta get out there, see the reps, know how to get better. So is the biggest stage the place to do it? I don't know. We're gonna find out. So yeah, really excited for that weekend. And to be back in the old Midwest. But all right, let's get the heck out of here If you'd like to support the show, you can find us on YouTube, or you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. We're almost at, we just surpassed 400. We're on our way to 500. We're on our way to 4,000. Help us get there. You can also support us on all major podcasting platforms, where you can leave us a 5-star review, make us look super duper cool. You know what? I almost forgot to say this. We have tokens! You can find our tokens are on screen right now. Join the Discord server. Reach out to Menace. And let me know if you'd like some tokens. Get some in your hands. You can also support us on Patreon, where you can become an official Pepperhead. For $3 a month, support the show. Become an official Pepperhead. Make your name turn Dr. Pepper Red on the Discord server. And you can also go over to Patreon and check out our new Patreon tier structure, and give us feedback on this new tier structure. If it's if you like it, if you don't like it, all of that feedback helps make the show and the Patreon platform a better place. You can also join the Discord server, join the community, join the conversation, talk about these decks, see what we're thinking about on a regular basis, which lately not a lot, not thinking a whole lot. So check it out there. Flash, any new verbs you would like to introduce to the Mockstars community?
No, just get glarbed. I think that's enough work for one day.
Yeah, me too. All right, this has been the Mockstars podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great rest of your day. Peace.
Bye.
Congratulations, you've made it to the end of the episode. You have arrived at this week's bi-weekly giveaway, the last of this current Patreon tier structure. So we wanted to do something a little bit special for all those people who've been supporting us from the beginning, people who've been official Pepperheads for so long. So I'm doing a little bit of a bigger giveaway this week. We're giving away a proxied version of the fabled Indoraptor, the perfect hybrid deck list that I put together and so famously piloted in Vegas in October. I also happened to land Slicer, and I think every single one of those games, it was just insane, the streak of Slicers and how much mayhem and havoc it caused. It's a super fun deck. I can't wait to see whose hands it ends up in. So let's go ahead and spin the wheel and see where this baby's going. It's slowing down. Ooh, it's draw for turn. Congratulations, draw for turn. I'll be reaching out shortly via Patreon and we'll get this deck in the mail on its way. We'll get you a set of tokens as well and a sticker to go along with it. Thank you so much to everybody for supporting the show thus far. And thank you so much for sticking around to the end of the episode. That's like the best thing you can do for the Al G Rhythm, the Don Cheadle. So thank you so much, and we'll catch you next time. Peace!